queens, the word that strikes fear in parents, teachers, principals. But delights advertisers and broadcast network and cable executives. So we're talking a little bit about tweens today. We're talking about 8 to 12-year-olds approximately. And there are over 25 million of these in the United States. And they have a lot of buying power. Not only do they have a lot of money from their parents, but they are also influential in parents' buying habits. Anything from cereal to cars and minivans. All right. So most of my research has to do particularly with adolescent girls. And two very instrumental books in the research on girls' behavior is Queen Bees and Wannabes by Rosalind Wiseman and Odd Girl Out by Rachel Simmons. And both of these sort of take a look at an ethnographic study of how girls interact, particularly in middle school going into high school. What's sort of interesting about these books are they've been made into popular media. Everyone's familiar with the movie Mean Girls. I really hated the movie Mean Girls in the sense of the goal of what the movie was supposed to do. Now, the book, Queen Bees and Wannabes, really talks about this concept of Mean Girls and how they're structured. But what the movie did is I thought it glamorized Mean Girls. After I left the movie, I went, oh my God, I want to be a Mean Girl. They have great clothes, they have all the boyfriends, everything turned out okay in the end. The other movie that didn't turn out so good was a TV movie based on Odd Girl Out. We had a suicide attempt. I don't want to give away the whole ending, spoiler alert. So as we're seeing that, the idea of adolescent girls is an interesting topic. And again, it's been transformed from studies into media. And so then I thought, well, why not look at some of the television representations? One thing why I look at television representation, why it's probably more important than movies, particularly in this age group, is cable subscription revenue is far more influential than box office sales and merchandise tie-ins. I mean, how many movies are out there for tween girls? Like none. You have like Frozen for the little girls, and then you have pretty much adult fare for everyone else. So there's just not a lot for that age group. And so Nickelodeon and Disney present hours and hours of original programming. So approximately starting in around 1989, but it really wasn't until 1991 when Clarissa Explains It All kind of set the tone for what the tween, as I say, tween coms were going to represent. And what's sort of interesting about this, Martins and Wilson did a content analysis, and they found that over 90% of the episodes contained some sort of social or relational aggression. So these weren't just happy-go-lucky, and often people think about Disney and princesses and Mickey Mouse, but in actuality, there's a lot of aggression in these programs. So I wanted to take a look at that, how it's represented. Okay. So here's a couple examples. This is from Lizzie McGuire. We have a lot of Lizzie McGuire examples because there just was a very relevant when it comes to this thing. So Kate and Lizzie were best friends in grade school, and now they're rivals. Lizzie says, what's your email address? Lizzie@biggestloser.com. I'm going to try to use the affective voice. Secret World of Alec Mack. Jessica says, we just wanted to tell you the elementary school called. A huge mistake has been made. They want you back in the fifth grade where you belong. And for those of you, that's Jessica Alba in a former life. Not the superstar that she is now. Okay. So when it comes to some other sorts of mean girl behavior. We have Amber, and she says to some random girl walking by, not even one of the main characters, she says, where did you get that outfit? Like, ugly or us? Here's another one that deals with clothing. Shelby says to Rosie, new girl alert, yikes, that outfit is pukular. What's with all the chains? Did you just escape from a fashion jail? And so right here, this is Shelby, and this is Rosie, and then later in the episode, Rosie actually is mean to Emma, who's the main character on the TV show Jesse. So as you'll see, it's just sort of circular in terms of everyone seems to be mean to everyone else. There's not specific mean girls and targets. This last one, Life of Boys, Kaylee says, where did you get inspiration for that litter box? Some cat lady's closet. And I personally, if you know me, I take offense to the cat lady reference. Anyway, so you see that it kind of went from their status to a lot about their outfits. Again, clothing is very important for girls of this age because they don't really have much control over anything else in their lives. A lot of the other research talks about boyfriends, and there's just not a lot of boyfriends in these concepts. They're still a little too young. It's still not a real focus. They're definitely not sleeping with each other. There might be an innocent kiss or two, but generally you don't have much interaction. Maybe in older examples like Victorious, where they're a little older and they're in high school, there'll be a couple of the characters often make out. But other than that, a lot of these tween coms still have that innocence of childhood. So most of the focus is on friendships. It's on struggling with social status, clubs, where to sit at lunch. A lot of these cheating on tests, interactions with parents and siblings and educators. Here's another there's some that target looks. This one is Tammy, who's a kind of a peripheral character. She says, "You guys should join. Oops, I forgot it's a good looking people. It's for good looking people. After all, it's a beauty pageant, not an average pageant." And so it's sort of interesting in some of these examples is we have some racial diversity. These are sisters. They're always this non-descriptive sort of ethnicity. As you say, it's never mentioned what they are exactly or who they represent. Sweet Life on Deck. London is probably the most brutal. She's a spoiled sort of character. Again, she's also ethnic. And so she says to Bailey, she bets Bailey $1 million that she can go like a full day without making fun of Bailey. Because Bailey's her punching bag. They're friends, but Bailey's pretty much her punching bags. Bailey comes from Kansas, she just really has this target on her back. And we'll talk about targets later. But Lennon says, "You're so hideous. For Halloween, you went as yourself. Another one is, you're so ugly. You have to sneak up on your mirror." So they do talk a little bit about looks. They don't necessarily talk about weight. There was one episode of Sweet Life on Deck where they did talk about, Sweet Life on Deck. That was the sequel to Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, if you're keeping score at home. And so one of the characters tells one of the other characters that she's got chicken legs, so she starts to eat. She tells the other one that her bottom is too big, and so she's like starving herself and exercising. And it turns out the girl that criticized both of them, she's seen backstage making herself throw up. And so that's like one of the very few examples we've found of talking or making fun of body size. But on the other hand, if you're looking at most of these characters, I try to put some photos so you could see what they look like. I mean, they're all very thin. There's Trisha on Austin and Allie. I watch too many of these shows, I know. But they really never talk about her weight. And then Veruca, she's from Lizzie McGuire. Again, they sort of stay away from that aspect of it. Okay. So here's another interaction. This is a brand new game called Game Shakers. And these girls are pretty young. I think they're probably about 12 years old in real life. And so anyway, this is the very pilot episode, and they're talking. There says, Babe says, "Oh, come on, we're friends." And Mackenzie says, "Well, you never talked to me at school." And Babe says, "Sure I do. Remember last week you were whistling in the girls' bathroom and I told you to shut up?" And Kenzie goes, "Oh, yeah." As though she's like, "Oh, that's okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. You did talk to me." Kind of missing the fact that I told you to shut up. So their relationship is very much in the vein of, you have Babe, who's sort of the prettier one, the more aggressive one, and then you have Kenzie, who's sort of the smart one, who designs the video games that the story is based on. And so you have that interaction between them. But yet they're friends. And so it's an interesting dynamic of how friends treat one another. All right. So once in a great while, it will become physical. Again, not a lot of physical, a lot of threats, as opposed to you rarely ever see punching or things like you would see in other venues. So Zuri, again, they're very little. They're probably 7 years old. Zuri says to the other, "One more crack out of you, and I'm going to knock those veneers in your mouth from here to Battery Park." This one, "Good luck, Charlie." So the dance teacher says, "Move a little closer, she's not going to bite." And so this is a picture of Joe and Gabe. And Gabe says, "Yes, but she will punch and kick." Which Joe responds, "It's true, I do that." And so sort of this acknowledgement of, yeah, I do that. And it's just sort of this acceptance of, this is the way a lot of these mean girls, and she delves into sort of this bully character as well. although there aren't many girl bullies, although I wanted to put it aside. So from my book, Bullies and Mean Girls in Popular Culture, one thing I found about when there were girl bullies, a lot of times the storyline read that they actually bullied boys. And almost every episode would start with the boy saying, you know, coming home with a black eye or a torn shirt. And the parents or siblings would say, oh, what happened? I got beat up by a bully. And then when they find out it was a girl, oh, that's hilarious. Like, how dare you get beat up by a girl? And generally what happens in 90% of the cases, it's that the girl actually has a crush on the boy and that she's just trying to get his attention. And so it's sort of this idea, this is very strange concept that domestic violence is okay if you're a girl and if you like the boy. And so this little thing says, I found this little print on images, and it says, love hurts, and it shows Joe sort of attacking Gabe. And so their whole relationship, she tries to be good, and then she doesn't. She still strikes out and physically abuses him. And so I thought that was just interesting. And because I think the smaller characters, because Joe is very, very small, we'll see her again in Dog with a Blog, she's very, very tiny, even for her age. And so it's sort of this like, concept that I found that the littler you are, the more aggressive you are physically. It could be a stature thing. I guess maybe as you get older, you use your words and your social status more to strike out against others. Okay, so in terms of theoretical basis, a couple of theories I'm looking at are social learning theory. Learning can occur by observing behavior and observing the consequences. So in other words, kids are... audiences are vicariously experiencing these things as they go along. And the important part of, I think, about social learning theory is not just the mimicry, but the idea that the audiences see what's being rewarded and what's being punished. And so if you ever have seen Bandura's Bobo doll studies, they show footage of adults beating the Bobo doll, and then they put kids in a room with the same toy to see whether or not they mimic it. And they find that if the adult was punished, the child is more less likely to imitate. If the adult was rewarded, hey, good job, you're sure strong, the child is more likely. And so I wanted to see what sorts of actions were rewarded and what actions were punished. And frankly, I couldn't find a lot of punishments. It was just sort of all in the context of humor and comedy, which is much different than things you might see in dramatic episodes. Now here's an example of this. This is from Ant Farm. Ant stands for... oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. Advanced Natural Talent. Yay, pull that one out. And so it's a bunch of little, probably middle schoolers who have a special school within the high school. So you have these talented middle schoolers who, of course, are sort of social misfits who are in the context of a high school. So when they go out to the lunchroom or they go out to their lockers, they're always meeting up with the more advanced, more powerful high school students. So this is a show within a show. So China, the main character, is watching this show called High Heels High. And the main character, Justine, who's the queen bee, says, once Tatiana's chemistry assignment accidentally explodes in her face, she'll be tragically disfigured and the chic makeup account will be mine. And the response to that is China goes, wow, Justine is a horrible person. I love her. And so again, it's just sort of this reward of even that she's meta-watching, like she's watching a show within a show and responding as if she's the audience. So the audience watching her responding as an audience member, I think tells a lot about what the audience watching says as well. Okay. Some notable factors about these twin comms that relate to this concept of social learning and why I think it's really important is one, that the characters need to be relatable. The more the model is relatable to the audience, they're more likely to internalize it, see themselves doing it, rehearse in their minds, and actually continue with the behavior. And so in terms of relatability, the mean girls are always very pretty, but not too pretty. Too pretty, that's reserved for the mean girls, the mean girl category. If they're too glamorous, if they're too pretty, if they're too fashionable, if they have too many boyfriends, if they're too popular, they get put in this other category. And so there's something sort of halfway about the main girl. Like, she can't be too pretty, but she has to be pretty enough. She can't be the most popular, but she can't be the least popular either. It has to be someone that the audience can relate to in addition to aspiring to. So it's a really interesting positioning. And that's why I think a lot of the characters are so identical to each other, why there's such a repetition and theme. Sarah's nodding with me. She knows. The other one is this concept of feedback. And again, rarely do these characters ever get punished. Their parents, the teachers, are often buffoons. They're clueless. They're powerless. The kids run all over them. There's lots of articles about how snarky they are. But what also I think is influential is the laugh track. Because these are comedies, because this is seen in the view of, oh, don't take this seriously in a sense, but then again, repeated over and over, you sort of get the sense of, this looks like it's acceptable behavior. They're running show after show. There's something to this in terms of acceptance and reward. And I think one of the biggest rewards is the laugh track. And I haven't done systematics, I guess I could do a decimal study, but that, you know, regardless of who's the target, who's the laugh traffic is just continuous. Like there's, you know, once in a while there'll be a ooh and an ah from the audience if, you know, something happens to the main girl, but generally it's usually consistent. So all behavior is being treated the same way, whether it's the mean girl attacking people below her or the people below her, you know, getting their revenge on the mean girl, which often is the case as well. There's this sort of idea that you can live vicariously through these middle mean girls, and so when they do fight back or do disparaging things to the mean girls, you can say, "Wow, I can enjoy that vicariously." Okay, so one of the methodologies is new to me. I was trained in quantitative, and now I'm sort of really interested in qualitative research because of the richness of these programs, is that, so thematic analysis, identifying broad ways in which girls are represented with a focus on exploring the implications of such representation. So sort of thing, what are the themes, what is being portrayed as positive, and then potentially, not definitively, what potentially might culture be gaining from this. And again, not only just little girls and developing girls, but also society at large, and parents and educators with their tropes in there. Yeah, can't go to a popular culture conference without hearing the word trope thrown about, tossed about. So trope is different storytelling devices and conventions. Again, just sort of it's a shortcut. Oftentimes it's a stereotype. So we see lots of those. If you see the title of my talk in terms of mean girls, stealth girls, targets and things. So a lot of these come from also from Wiseman, from Queen Bees and Wannabes. She also did sort of an analysis of kind of characters that she saw in the real world, classifications, not characters. She saw the queen bee, the sidekick. The banker is the one that sees something and then she saves it for a special occasion, so that she sees somebody flirting with somebody else's boyfriend. She doesn't tell right away. She waits strategically until the time is right so that she can elevate herself in status. The floater is someone who can go from group to group. A lot of these main girls in the tween comms fit the sort of the floater. They don't really belong to one group. The torn bystander who isn't sure whether or not they should go along with particularly laughing at somebody else who's been being put down. Or because oftentimes they fear that if they speak out, that they're going to be the target. You have the pleaser, the wannabes are the second and third tier after the queen bee, the messenger, and the target. And what I did too is I added main girl and stealth girls to when you're looking at the representation of the portrayals on TV, added too. And again, you don't see a lot of these. Mostly you see the queen bee, the sidekick, bankers, floaters. Oftentimes these shows aren't sophisticated enough to carry these sorts of characters. Generally these episodes are 22 minutes long. The other thing about these shows is you don't have to watch them in chronological order. In fact, you can pretty much watch them at any time. They're sort of self-contained episodes. So you rarely see any character transforming over the span of the series because these are just repeated. You know, probably should have given you a screenshot of the schedule, but like any time of day, these shows might be on 6 or 7 times throughout the day. And so I think that's another reason why there's not that much sophistication. And plus, they're comedies, they're not dramas, and also the attention span of the audience as well, and the sophistication of the audience. And they want to be entertained. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about these representations. And so here we have Hannah Montana. So Miley is the main girl, and Lily is her sidekick, and the mean girls are Ashley and Amber. So you can just see the difference. Hopefully you can see the difference. that, you know, you've got this wholesome sort of look, but then you have sort of this sort of more menacing sort of look, more fashionable, but yet you can certainly tell without even the volume on, you can always tell who's supposed to be the main girl and who's supposed to be the main girls. So Ashley and Amber, sometimes they talk in unison. A lot of these mean girls will talk in unison. So here's an example. This is from the pilot. This is when we first get introduced to Amber and Ashley. And Lily and Miley are, they set their trays down by the cute boys. And as they're going to sit down, Amber and Ashley move their trays away and sit down. And Lily says, "Hey, Amber and Ashley, we were going to sit there." Amber says, "Well, isn't that too bad?" And Ashley says, "Well, don't worry. There are seats over there by the trash can." And then in unison, Amber and Ashley go at the loser's table. Ooh! They do this little, do it with me, little handshaky thing. So one thing about a lot of the main girls, they do fight back. They do get retribution. And so after they say that, Miley attacks Amber and says, "Hey, it might be time to pluck the stash." And Lily says, "And Ashley, is that a zit or are you growing a new head?" And then in unison, Miley and Lily say, "Gross, ew, ew." Okay. So a lot of times the main girl is strong enough to stand up to the mean girl. Generally, you don't have a character who isn't able. Because first of all, it wouldn't be funny. And second of all, it wouldn't be the audience member wouldn't relate to that sort of, they might empathize with her, but it wouldn't be somebody they would try to aspire to. Okay, so in terms of Hannah Montana, oh, so then we're also adding Dandruff Danny to the target mix. Dandruff Danny. Mm-hmm. How much on the nose can you get? He's always scratching his head. So Amber and Ashley's coolest comes out, and Lily says, "How far down are we?" Oliver says, "It was a male friend of theirs. Keep going, keep going. Just skip to the last page." And Miley goes, "Oh, we're tied dead last with Dandruff Danny." And so instead of sort of feeling sorry for Dandruff Danny or sort of feeling, they come back with, Danny says, as soon as they say Dandruff Danny, Danny says, "Is somebody talking about me?" And Miley says, "Look away, look away." And so in a sense, it's this tier system where you have Miley and Lily in the middle, and you've got Amber and Ashley above, but then you have somebody for them to pick on, Dandruff Danny, as though he's the deserving target. He's a deserving victim. It's like, we can make fun of him. And so it doesn't happen too often, but I think it's a troubling trend in the fact that, you know, we're supposed to feel sorry for Miley and Lily for being picked on by the mean girls, but yet they're turning around and picking on Dandruff Danny as well. And a lot of the research from Ferling shows that this is pretty general in schools, that people aren't necessarily just the target or just the perpetrator of aggression, that like the top 5% of people in high school, they don't need to be aggressive because they're at the top. They're successful, they can be likable. And usually like the bottom 5 or 10%, they're just plain victims, they don't have the strength. But you know, the 80% in the middle, sort of the 80-20 rule, it's a constant battle of, okay, I'm being victimized, but yet I'm victimizing. And so I think it's actually more true to life than examples. But still, it's troubling the way they represent a lot of these. iCarly, lots of characters here. So Carly's the main girl. She's the nice one. Sam is the sidekick. Really mean. Like, bully mean. Like, just a nasty person. And then, yeah, just, you'll see. And then Freddie, poor Freddie. Freddie's in love with Carly. He's the target. And then Spencer's the, you know, you always have to have a clueless big brother who is taking care of Carly. Okay. So taking a look a little bit at their relationship, and Sam goes, "You know what? Anybody but me would punch you right in the neck, right in the head." And Carly responds with, "Which is why you're my best friend." And so it's this weird relationship between Carly and Sam, as though Sam just misbehaves and is just really socially inappropriate, but yet Carly covers for her and just considers the idea that, oh, you didn't punch me in the head, then we can sort of be best friends. So Freddie, poor Freddie, though he's the target, he complains, "Sam broke into my locker while I was in gym class and cut the sleeves off my shirt and legs off my pants." And so instead of standing up for him, what does Carly do? She just says to Sam, why do fish sticks always make you so rambunctious? And Sam just says, well, I think it's the tartar sauce. And so it's just sort of like they're having this cute little talk, whereas poor Freddy's standing there with his clothes destroyed. So Freddy tries to stand up for himself. He says, your head's full of tartar sauce. And then Carly sticks up for Sam, says, please, can't we remember we're all friends here? And Freddy says, this thing is not my friend. And so, poor Freddy. Okay. So again, just sort of, so this is where that all that aggression comes in. And then Ellis is, oh, there's a Waverly Place. Okay. So we have Alex Selena Gomez as the main girl and Harper as the sidekick. And so a lot of pictures of them, I was doing Google Images, and all of them were like hugging and doing all sorts of fun stuff together. But I think what's troubling about this is that there's this other side. I call Alex the stealth girl. And then Harper becomes the target. And so it's sort of this system of the sidekick or the best friend is less attractive, she's less popular. It's as if Alex was doing her a favor by being her friend. And it's also, Harper, as many of these sidekicks are, pretty dim. Like, Alex says all kinds of mean things to her, but it just doesn't seem like it ever registers with Harper. She just kind of lets it float over her head. Here's just one example. Harper goes, oh, I thought you were allergic to other people's clothes. That's why you never borrow mine. Like, Alex is always, like, purposely making fun of, well, Harper's got crazy clothes. She's got little ducks taped to her shirt. But, you know, Alex will say something sarcastic, or she'll say it under her breath, or she'll roll her eyes. There's just a lot of, like, I guess, you know, micro expressions of almost disgust with Harper, although they're supposed to be best friends and they talk about loving each other. Alrighty. So, I just want to show a clip of the third wheel. This is in the third season, and finally, Harper stands up for herself against Alex, who's been really mean to her. So, we're going to jump to. Unless you want to watch all 22 minutes, but I'm guessing now.
Well. Oh no. What? What's it? And it's one of the more pleasant afternoons you've ever spent together.
Out all the constant stares, and it was me.
So, Alex has a new friend, Stevie, who's also a wizard. And Harper's kind of jealous because Alex goes off and does fun things with Stevie. She even borrows money from Harper so that she can go out with Stevie. She says, you know, because Harper thinks, oh, she's going to ask me to come along. And then she's like, oh, can I borrow money? And so what happens is the brother, who's also a wizard, pretends he's Alex and helps build a float with Harper. And then Harper discovers that, in fact, it wasn't Alex. Alex was off with her other friend. And so, I think that's enough.
I use magic for selfish purposes to turn myself into Alex.
And that means you are always Stevie. And I really am the third wheel. Oh, I can't believe it.
Third wheel? Wait, are you saying that I can't hang out with other friends?
Well, I guess you can do whatever you want, Alex, just like you always do. And I'll keep on forgetting you, just like I always do.
Is that the way you think our relationship works?
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh. Well, now I'm getting upset with you.
Oh, well, don't worry. I won't hold it against you. I never do.
Will you stop it? You're not acting like a very good friend right now.
Excuse me?
Uh-oh.
Did you just say I'm not acting like a very good friend? Because you can call me a lot of things, Alex, and you have, but a bad friend is not okay. Would a bad friend be working so hard on something she hates? That's right, I hate this float idea. I think it's tacky and cynical. But I'm working on it because it's the one my best friend wanted to do. That's the kind of friend I am.
Fine. If you hate this float so much, then why don't I just get rid of it for you? That's the kind of friend I am.
What are you doing? Stop it!
Well, I'm not letting you do it after all because that's the kind of friend I am!
Well, I'm gonna tear fast and take you the trouble because that's the kind of friend I am.
Friends!
By the way, I forgive you!
What?
Mr.
18,
I can explain.
Spare me the tattletale act, Mr. Russo. When I heard your sister was involved in this, I knew it would end badly. You are like a dust devil in a field of bristle brush, Missy.
Oh, come on. You're just making stuff up that sounds Western now, aren't you?
You are destroying school-funded property, which is grounds for expulsion. Come on, let's go.
Wait! You can't expel Alex.
Why not?
Because it was me. Alex had nothing to do with this. It was all my fault.
Well, I'll admit I'm surprised to hear you say that, Miss Finkel.
Harper, what are you doing? You're just telling the truth.
I am. This was all me.
No, it wasn't, Mr. Laertie. It was me, too. In fact, it was mostly me. You can't punish Harper for this.
Well, let's see. Two people telling me two completely different stories. How will I ever solve this problem? I believe Harper.
What? Wait, what?
Because frankly, Miss Russo, you are a liar. And as for you, Miss Finkel, there's a special place reserved in detention for first offenders. Actually, it's not that special. It's a beanbag chair in my office. But good luck getting out of it. The Trail of Tears is that way.
Jeez.
This isn't so bad.
Yeah, well, wait until you try and get up. Show off. You just earned yourself an extra hour detention.
And I'm worried that you're still mad at me.
If I was still mad at you, would I have taken the blame for ruining the homecoming float?
Yeah, why did you do that?
Because I saw how much trouble you're going to get into. And even though Stevie's your best friend, I guess I want to keep being your friend too.
Well, you're not my friend, Harper.
What?
Stevie's my friend. You're my sister.
So we got some ahs from the audience. Okay. So anyway, you know, a lot of things are happening here. Harper finally sends up for herself, and then how does it resolve? Nothing.
Nothing.
No. Alex doesn't learn anything. She doesn't really apologize. Harper just goes back to being her doormat self, her submissive self, and you know, sort of this idea of this is what sisters are like. They love each other, but yet. Yeah, in the very next episode, Alex hasn't learned anything. She's still her sort of conniving wife. You also see the principal, sort of a goofy guy. You know, he just says to Alex, "You're a liar." I mean, he's channeling Donald Trump or something. But so it's the idea that you know, Alex has this reputation, just the way that the principal and the student talk to each other. Both of them are just extremely inappropriate throughout the series as well. Okay. So one of the main tropes that comes up over and over again is the concept of cheerleading. And it says, in the United States, cheerleading is often perceived as the highest status activity for school for girls, and they occupy positions of power, prestige, and privilege. So there's something about cheerleading. And if you look at cheerleading, it's sort of subservient to male sports, that these girls are cheering for the boys' teams. But yet, within its own context of the girl culture, the cheerleader is usually the highest status, usually the queen bees. And a lot of times on these shows, there are no parents, of course. There's very rarely any teachers or administrators around. A lot of these cheerleading tryouts, it's the other cheerleaders picking more cheerleaders, and so it's sort of, you know, very incestuous. So a few things about cheerleaders. Back to Lizzie McGuire. Kate just says, "Gordo, you and your friends are you and your friends confused? This is cheerleader zone. Bye-bye." And so they have, you know, again, the lunch table is this big, huge symbol of power. Where you sit at lunch is a pretty huge deal. Some other things that happen within the cheerleading. Lizzie tries out. She's okay. I know what you're thinking. Me, Lizzie McGuire, cheerleader. What's up with that? I mean, nothing could be more superficial, demeaning, and shallow. So again, they have this really negative concept of cheerleader. She says, cheerleading is like a plot to make girls feel bad about themselves. And what follows? Cheerleaders walk in, she looks dreamily at them, walking in slow motion, and says, "But I hope I make it, I hope I make it." So there's this constant struggle of, I want to be on the top, but I don't want to be on the top. I want to be on the top, but I don't want to be on the top. Again, so there's this kind of limbo that girls struggle with, I think, too, in their life. Dot with a blog, so we have Joe comes back. I mean, she makes a cheerleading team because she's so tiny, she gets to be on the top of the pyramid. It's the only reason she makes it. So her friend, Lindsay, so the cheerleader says, and they're not even named. I looked on IMDb, and it's cheerleader one and cheerleader two. They don't even have names. They're sort of this conglomeration of cheerleaders. It says, look, Avery, it's not really a cheerleader meeting. We just don't like Lindsay. And she says, if you want to hang out with her, you can't hang out with us. And so Avery's struggling. She really wants to be a cheerleader, but she also thinks she can try to trick Lindsay into it, and she gets caught. And so then Avery says to Lindsay, so Lindsay gets upset with her, and to make up for it, Lindsay says, I got you invited to cheerleader sleep over at Bree's house next week. And what does Lindsay say? Avery, you're my best friend ever. They scream and hug, and Avery says, so you forgive me? And Lindsay says, of course. And then she makes this very interesting statement. I guess throwing away everything you believe in with the cheerleaders isn't shallow, it's flexible. So again, it's this struggle of, we demean the cheerleaders, we talk about them, but we want to be them. Here's another sort of interesting, Casey's a little older, is more in high school, and her friend wants to try out cheerleading. They always want to try out cheerleading, something to do together. Casey says, I can't wait for those obnoxious mean girls to tell me I'm not pretty enough, peppy enough, or good enough to be in their squad. Cheerleader comes out, and she's all, shows tons of confidence. We need school and spirit ambassadors. Our job is to empower our team. She's saying all these nice things. You know, if we can, let's make this world a better place to live while we're in it. Who's with me? And then Casey cynically says, see, pure evil. And so it's kind of showing that there actually are good cheerleaders, but Casey's still is not convinced. Okay. The other big theme is popularity, not so much a trope, but a theme. That popularity, again, in these shows, it's just a real constant. Not even, it could be specific shows, but it could be threaded throughout multiple shows. And Ned's declassified. So we have Missy, who's the mean girl, and she's actually giving a popularity seminar to some of the other kids in school. And she says, if you want to be popular, you can't be seen with kids who are unpopular, aka lames, dorkos, dweebs. Helpful tip number 15, don't hang out with the unpopular kids. And Ned says, well, wait a minute. What if an unpopular kid is your friend? And Missy says, if they were your friends, they wouldn't be so popular. So they wouldn't be unpopular, so I would drop them. You know, the logic of Missy and the popular. And so Ned goes, always at the end of the episode, he goes in the soliloquy of, you only have to be popular with your friends. Okay. So another example, how to rock. Stevie goes, there's lots of Stevies. These are the perfs. They're sort of like the plastics from Mean Girl. She says, you're at the mall all the time. All you ever do is shop and pose. Don't you have any hobbies? And they say, in unison, we like to shop and pose. And so there's also sort of this airheadedness to a lot of the popularity. Not only they're mean, but often they're airheaded, not very bright. Lizzie McGuire again. So in terms of popularity, she says to Lizzie that, Ben, I just want to let you know how cute it is. I think they can actually have a chance. They're running against for student body president or student of the class. Just cute in a loser kind of way. And she makes an L with her fingers. And she says, bottom line is I'm popular. And you're not, so I win. So it's just kind of the statement of what we all know, but she says it directly. And Lizzie just kind of, she just gets up and says, popular kids win everything. It's been that way since kindergarten. The rest of us are just doomed. And so it's just this realization that this is just the way life goes. In another episode, Kate hurts herself and she can't be a cheerleader. So Claire kicks her out of the cheerleading squad. She doesn't get to sit at the cheerleader table anymore. So Lizzie shows her how to do a cartwheel with one arm, so she gets back on the team, and then Claire hurts herself, and then she can't be on the team, and so sort of this craziness is going on. Lizzie says, I can't believe Kate didn't learn anything from this. I mean, she treats people like dirt, right? Then they treat her like dirt, and then she treats them like dirt again, and then her friends Gordo and Miranda just say, it's a circle of life, so the natural order of things has been restored, and so nothing ever advances. It's just sort of this status quo. Again, over and over in the shows. And then finally, Girl Meets World, Riley says, well, I guess we're back to where popularity is going to be kind of hard, because Riley thinks she's going to be in a popular group, and then doesn't work out. And Maya, who she's very self-confident, she's sort of that tough girl, and Riley's just she's just a bundle of wears her heart on her sleeve. And Maya says, "I wouldn't know, so let's not try to find out." Because Maya doesn't want to be popular, Riley does. And then Riley sweetly says, "The one thing about being yourself is that you will always be popular with your best friend." So, I know. So Girl Meets World is, if you ever watch Boy Meets World, it's Corey and Topanga's daughter is Riley. And Corey is the teacher. Anyway, so it's very sweet. Okay. So, takeaways. So first of all, stereotyping girls as shallow and catty is one of the main plot drivers of these shows. Again, there's very stereotypical. It's sort of the same formulaic over and over with slightly different variations and themes. And so, designation of the mean girl underplays relational aggression coming from mean girls or friends. So this idea that if you designate the mean girl, she's the one that her behavior is bad. But when like Alex or any of the other character main girls are mean to other people, it seems to be forgiven because they're not the mean girl, so they're just mean girls. And so I think the designation sort of resolves them of any responsibility of being mean because the understanding is that the mean behavior comes from the mean girl. And then finally, there's this underlying conundrum about desiring popularity and cheerleadership and rejecting at the same time. So it's this kind of reflects the struggle that are in the Queen Bees and Wannabes and the Odd Girl Out book, that just adolescents and girls, it's just such a struggle of, you know, you want to be yourself, you want to be liked, but you want to be popular, and it's just what these shows often do is culminate and reflect as well as mirror back, but also create this world where these themes and tropes are perpetuated.